You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a JournalWatch podcast. This is podcast number 49, and it's for the week of July 10. I'm Joe Elia. We've got an interview with three co-authors of a New England Journal of Medicine study on the benefits of renin-angiotensin blockade in the primary prevention of diabetic nephropathy and type 1 disease. But first, a look at this week's top medical headlines. First, propoxyphene-containing drugs, read Darvon and Darvocet, will get boxed warnings emphasizing the dangers of fatal overdose. Next, there's a drug in phase 3 studies called famotidine that seems to lower the risk of GI complications from low-dose aspirin therapy. And finally this week, dronedarone has been approved by the FDA as maintenance therapy in atrial fibrillation and atrial flutter. It's a derivative of amiodarone, but it doesn't have an iodine group in its molecule and is less lipophilic. The theory is that it offers less toxicity to the thyroid and a nervous system. It's not to be used in severe heart failure, though. Now, on to the interview. In the July 2nd New England Journal of Medicine, researchers sought to determine whether renin-angiotensin blockade in type 1 diabetes would forestall nephropathy and retinopathy in some 300 patients with normal blood pressure and no proliferative retinopathy. Patients were randomized to receive daily either the ACE inhibitor enalapril or the angiotensin receptor blocker losartan or placebo. They were followed for 5 years. By the 5-year mark, histopathological changes in the kidney were similar across the three groups. Losartan was associated with a faster progression of albuminuria than either placebo or enalapril. Renin-angiotensin blockade seemed to slow retinopathy substantially more than placebo. To discuss the implications of all this, we've invited the article's first author, Michael Maurer, its senior author, Arnold Klein, and second author, Bernard Zinman, to Clinical Conversations. Dr. Maurer is a professor of pediatrics and medicine at the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Klein is a professor of ophthalmology and visual sciences at the University of Wisconsin, and Dr. Zinman is a senior researcher in diabetes and a professor of medicine at the University of Toronto. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
We've never had this many people on a clinical conversation before, so I'll ask you to identify yourselves before you jump in, and we'll see how this goes. And someone has told me that as I was preparing for this interview that physicians talk themselves into giving renin-angiotensin blockade to their diabetic patients. They seem to want to find an excuse to do it because they think it's going to work. Do you think that that's going to change now as a result of your research, Dr. Maurer?
Well, it's a bit difficult to answer that question because there are two elements to the study. I'll just add one more piece to the study design. Mm-hmm. Not only were the subjects normotensive and off of all blood pressure, on no blood pressure medication at the inception of the study, but they also had, they were normal albuminuric, and that's an important point.
Mm-hmm.
As far as how physicians are going to react, there are the two components to the study. One is that we could not demonstrate a benefit of either medication, of renin-angiotensin system blockade, on any kidney parameter, whether we looked at the change in kidney structure in two biopsies spaced 5 years apart, whether we looked at the decline in GFR, or glomerular filtration rate,
mm-hmm.
or filtering function of the kidney, or whether we looked at albumin in the urine, we could not find the benefit of treatment at the end of 5 years or during the 5-year period. On the other hand, there was a very significant effect of both of the drugs on the progression of retinopathy, particularly in people with no or mild retinopathy at baseline over the 5 years of the study. And retinopathy is a very major complication of of type 1 diabetes. So I think there are these two sides to the story that that are told by the paper. Bernie, do you have some thoughts on how clinicians are reacting to this?
Yes, I think that there may be a change in the context of it is probably common practice before our study to use ACE inhibitors in patients who are almost newly diagnosed, or certainly recently diagnosed, with type 1 diabetes, with the view that, well, if it helps when you already have kidney disease, it probably would prevent you from getting kidney disease. So I've seen patients put on ACE inhibitors very early on in the course of their condition on that basis. And I think people will take pause, given the findings from the RAS study, that primary prevention of kidney disease is really has not been demonstrated, and the evidence does not support that that is an effective intervention. The difference between the kidneys and the eyes is that ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blockers are generally viewed by most practicing physicians as blood pressure and kidney therapy kind of medications. The fact that we saw a benefit in the eyes obviously raises some very important considerations with respect to using it with respect to eye disease. The difference being, of course, that people can have regular fundus photography and examination of their eyes. And so I don't think people will be as readily anxious to initiate long-term ACE inhibitor therapy early on in the course of diabetes.
So were those findings a surprise about the retinopathy?
There was some indication in the literature that blockade of the renin angiotensin system might benefit the eye. Mm-hmm. There was a study using lisinopril that was a sort of a secondary a study of people with a microalbuminuria, and there was a trend in that study towards a benefit. The study was confounded by a better level of glycemic control in the lisinopril-treated people, so it was a bit difficult to interpret.
Uh-huh.
But based on the lisinopril data, we decided to add the eye studies onto our studies, and there was a very major study carried out in a large number of centers called the DIRECT trial, which looked at candesartan, an angiotensin receptor blocker, and its effect on diabetic eye disease in type 1 and type 2 diabetes. More or less, the two studies seem to be telling the same story in type 1 diabetes. In type 2 diabetes, the story in the DIRECT trial was different in that there really was no preventative benefit.
Now, of the two drugs, knowing what we now know, that renin angiotensin blockade doesn't really help with nephropathy, the ARB...
Sure, can I jump in here?
Sure.
for a second before you get to this question? This is sort of a unique opportunity here because Dr. Klein was involved in our study and also was involved in the DIRECT study. So I'd like to hear his comments as well regarding the eye findings in RAS and perhaps a little bit on the DIRECT trial as
sure.
well.
I think they're both consistent in showing a benefit of the drug. As you know, the DIRECT trial dismissed statistical significance, came out with a p-value of 0.5081, but the consistency is very striking. I think what we still don't know for sure is whether it's the drug itself or whether it's some blood pressure lowering, or whether it's an effect on the renin system itself, but there seems to be some benefit, and I think that's very positive in terms of people who seem to be progressing in early stages of their retinopathy, despite fairly decent glycemic control. It's another way of intervening for retinopathy in these type of patients.
On the other hand, losartan seemed to speed up albuminuria, so... You have two drugs here, enalapril and losartan, And if you're going to give one of these, if you're going to continue using one of these as a blocker, then am I drawing the wrong conclusion by saying that enalapril would be the choice?
I think that based on the data in the RAS study, enalapril might be the first choice. A couple of caveats. About 10% of people on ACE inhibitors will be intolerant of the drug because of side effects such as cough.
Mm-hmm.
And so an angiotensin receptor blocker would be a reasonable alternative. I think if there's concern about accelerated development of microalbuminuria, that's something that can be followed. And so if I were to put patients on these drugs, I think that should be carefully and regularly monitored. I'd also mention that the REC trial did look at albumin excretion rate. The numbers of people were much larger, as you could have in a study that didn't require two research kidney biopsies. And in that study, there was no benefit of the candesartan treatment on the rate of development of new microalbuminuria in people who were normal albuminuric at baseline. On the other hand, the increase in the frequency of progression from the normal albumin excretion rate to microalbuminuria that we saw in RAS was not seen in the direct trial. So those observations on our relatively small number of patients have not been confirmed, and I wouldn't want to raise alarms that are out of proportion to the data.
Okay. So
yeah, I would agree with that. Bernie Zinnemann here. I'm just, you know, I think we certainly can't conclude that losartan has a deleterious effect on kidney function from these studies. There was no change in the measured clearance, and the changes that we saw are small changes in small numbers of patients. So,
okay.
You know, we need to be cautious about over interpreting that.
Okay. It's interesting that you used an electron microscope to look at these small changes in the glomerulus, and it turns out that the simple measurement of microalbuminuria was the thing that was probably a better indicator for you, wasn't it?
No, I would not agree with that. I think that at these early stages of diabetic kidney disease, measurement of albumin in the urine is in fact a rather imprecise guide in regard to risk. We've measured it and we defined it as normal and microalbuminuria because this is such a highly consistent way that clinicians follow patients, and there's so much literature on this subject. But I think it's much more important as to whether you're preventing the kidney damage that we see under the microscope and can measure than any changes in albumin excretion rate. Because if you are preventing the kidney damage that ultimately leads to kidney failure, then that's a critical outcome. Microalbuminuria is, in fact, although a significant predictor and maybe the best one we have, a very imprecise predictor of diabetic kidney disease risk.
Well, it's at least a comfort to know that people won't have to go out and buy electron microscopes to manage their their diabetic patients. Not yet.
Not immediately, but the fact of the matter is, and this is an unfortunate state that we're in. The fact of the matter is that we have no good and precise biomarkers of risk of diabetic kidney disease at its early stages. And by the time the indicators become clear, that is, there's elevated in type 1 diabetes, there's elevated blood pressure, there's clearly elevated albumin excretion, and there's an established decline in glomerular filtration rate. At that point, when when it's very clear the patient has diabetic nephropathy, it's very difficult to stop the progression to end-stage kidney disease. You may be able to slow it down, but the ability to stop it is limited.
Okay. Your paper concludes that blockade, renin-angiotensin blockade for primary prevention of nephropathy is not supported by your data, and I think that's probably the message that you want to leave with our listeners here. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, we also want to make sure that people don't now not use effective RAS blockade in people who have established kidney disease. So there's no question that if you have established kidney disease as measured by changes in GFR, creatinine clearance, or proteinuria, there's good evidence that RAS blockade slows the deterioration in kidney disease, and obviously that should be used and is effective for managing those patients.
Yeah. I would just comment in addition about the importance of blood pressure control. So I think that from a variety of different studies, it's critical that very tight blood pressure control be maintained. There is an added advantage in people whose GFR is substantially reduced to controlling blood pressure with a renin-angiotensin system blocker as to opposed to other classes of antihypertensive medications. But it's always compared to similar levels of blood pressure control with other drugs. So I think for the clinician, the number one message is control the blood pressure and drive the blood pressures down to the ADA's stated goals of less than 130 over, I think it's 85 now, Bernie?
Yes. I think with established renal disease, it's 80.
130 over 80.
Right.
And then in addition to that blood pressure control, renin-angiotensin system blockade may offer additional help in terms of slowing progression to end-stage kidney disease. So if the patient is put on a renin-angiotensin system blocker and blood pressure control does not reach those goals, other drugs must be added until that goal is reached, because that's the critical variable. You get some boost from the renin-angiotensin system blockers, but that's in the context of good blood pressure control.
All right. Good advice. Dr. Maurer, Dr. Klein, Dr. Zinman, I want to thank you for your time with us today.
You're welcome.
Oh, pleasure. You're welcome. Good to talk with you, John.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to give us your reactions, we're all ears, at 617-440-4374. You can also email me at jelia@nejm.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano, and I'm Joe Elia. Join us here again next week. Enough said.